Welcome to episode 45 of A Shot of Business Central and a Beer podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing Ken's choice for this month's beer and what we think its rating should be. We're also going to be sharing the latest news and updates on Business Central, as well as diving into the ever-popular hot topic of artificial intelligence, specifically ChatGPT and how it relates to Microsoft and Business Central. So grab a cold one and get ready to join us. Ken, happy 45th episode, my friend.
Oh, of course. Happy 45th anniversary. It's always 45th? Such a huge, huge number. The 45th, right?
You know, but doing it one by one every month, it's a pretty big number. We've been at this for a while.
It's 2023. We're back from our holiday hiatus. Looking forward to some new and exciting things now. Microsoft has released, including our topic of the day, ChatGPT, yep, and how that might play into Business Central or other Microsoft products that people use every day. And we're going to hit on the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yes, we are, because artificial intelligence could play a major part in everybody's life, yep, not just with software.
That's what they're saying.
So what are we drinking, my friend? What'd you bring it for us?
Today we've got delicious little beer called Phase 3. It's called P3 Japanese Style Rice Lager. The brewery is Phase 3 Brewing Company.
You know where they're out of?
I do not.
Lake Zurich, Illinois. Ah. Owned by three people. Now, this is interesting. I thought two of the owners met and got married while they were working at a bar in Schaumburg, Illinois, which is right by...
Right where we're at.
Yeah.
How about that? Small world.
Very small.
I did not have all that beautiful backdrop on it. but it caught my eye because it is a rice lager. And I thought, a rice lager? That's something different, maybe, that we haven't had before.
Absolutely.
So it actually turns out that I think we may have had a rice lager. We had Asahi.
Yeah.
Which is a Japanese beer, maybe 6 months ago or a year ago.
Right around.
And that was delicious. I was a big fan of that.
Yeah.
And this one, on my first whiff, it actually smelled like Miller Genuine Draft. Good old MGD.
Yes. Actually, it really does smell like a domestic beer. It's very light-colored for a lager. Probably one of the lighter beers that we've had. I did some little research on the alcohol content. It's very weak, too, 4.2%.
Ah.
So.
Yep. Yeah, so there are American lagers that do have that use rice. Budweiser and Bud Light.
What?
Are two of the most well-known.
Really?
Whereas other beers use corn syrup instead of rice to achieve largely the same effect. Like Miller and Coors. More corn syrup.
What about MGD?
I would think that would fall. That would be rice? The corn flop, corn syrup. Yep, not rice. But
all right, I'm going to give it a taste. Maybe have you tried it yet?
Maybe it's Budweiser that I smell. But yeah, it's pretty good. I think I like the Asahi better than this one. But ooh. and kind of incorporate our ChatGPT. GPT, am I saying that right?
You are, ChatGPT.
So
I can't say it myself.
Yeah, they need to change that name. to incorporate that, we would you ask it, what is the best rice lager available?
We also asked it, what is a rice lager?
Oh, yeah, rice lager. So they replace the barley with rice. So it gives it a little bit of a distinct flavor.
Yeah, and ChatGPT actually gave us a three-paragraph answer talking about everything. And so it's pretty amazing what ChatGPT can do. And it's only been out to the public, I guess, for a month. So
yeah, it says rice lagers are typically light in color and body with a crisp and refreshing taste. I would say that's true. The use of rice in brewing can contribute to a higher alcohol content and a dry, crisp finish. Dry, crisp finish, maybe. Higher alcohol content, no, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think so. 4. But then again, 2? Yeah, but my vision or perception of what we drank last time was the, what they call it?
Asahi.
Asahi. A little construed because we had those Japanese chips, snacks that had a really fishy taste to them.
Yeah.
So I remember that more than the beer.
Your fish pretzels that you brought?
Yeah, yeah, whatever it was, yeah.
Yeah, please don't bring those again, by the way.
I won't.
And Sapporo is also a rice lager. So probably the most well-known Japanese beer, I think, probably, is Sapporo. And that also is a rice lager. So I'm going to kick back and enjoy this. I think we've got a really sweet agenda today. News, 2023 Wave 1.
Oh,
new features list is out. So we are going to kind of give you just a high-level overview of what those features are. And then we're going to share with you one or two of our favorites in each category. I don't, in the past we've kind of took
gone
time
through
going
one.
Through each one. And it's like a marathon.
Yeah, it's the whole podcast.
So
2 hours worth.
Yeah, I think we're going to entrust people to go find the list of new features out on the intraweb. And then and we can kind of just give our thoughts on what we think some of the best new features are.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, ChatGPT.
Back with a shot of Business Central, and got some pretty interesting news in today's segment. First off, we're going to start with update 21.3 for Business Central 2022. Release Wave 2 has been released. It's got 6 feature changes. You got reuse launch configuration across workspace projects, media image support for Business Central connectors, which I kind of like, Power Apps, and Power Automate support for document attachments. It's over my head.
Just a few samples, but we'll do a deep dive on all of these features.
All right,
in this segment.
Finally, too, Business Central mobile app for Android and iOS has finally been updated. I've not heard of an update since it probably came out, so that's big news. I didn't see any new features added to it or whatnot, so we'll see what happens.
There was about a year ago, maybe, that there was something with the Business Central app that you had to go update it or download a new one, a new version of it or something. It was about a year ago, I think. But yeah,
is the desktop app? Do you know if the desktop app for Business Central no longer working? I think somebody told me that.
Oh yeah, it works. I use it.
Is it? Oh, I thought somebody told
me. I have Windows 10 or 11 or something. 12, 13.
All right. Next up, the big one, the 2023 Release Wave 1. I think I'm just going to start calling it 2023 R1 from now on and then R2. Names are just too long. So the Release Wave plan, it's now available. And also there is a new release portal that's going to provides details on all the features. I don't know if anybody's seen this, but it's pretty nice. It tells you all the planned upcoming features. They have 49. I counted 47. Maybe I missed something.
Two are upcoming next month. Maybe those are the other two.
Could be, yeah. Trying now is just all the ones from the past. But we got what? User experiences first. Anything here that sticks out for you, Ken? I guess.
Well, are we going
to go through one by one?
Hit on that later?
Oh, as a separate thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll attack the go through all these lists of different categories and specific features. I've got a few of my favorites picked out, but we'll kind of after we get through all the news, we'll come back and hit this pretty hard.
All right. Next up, I put this in the news. We're talking about earlier, just to upset my friend Ken, and it's Soren Fries Alexanderson. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I don't know. This person's located overseas. He's the first principal product manager at Dynamics 365 Business Central. And he posted on his LinkedIn. I'm going to read it to you. He says, "What if you, as a Business Central partner, could allow your potential customers to start a trial with your app preloaded?" I like that. It's not bad. "What if you could profile potential customers on your website and spin up a trial that matches the individual business's needs?" I like that. Currently, there's really no way to track.
Yeah. So somebody. Far, it sounds reasonable.
Yeah. What if you could build an app that could handle both the trial and onboarding experience based on the business's needs? Getting a little iffy, right?
Yeah, that's where he's losing me right there, because a lot of companies that exist within the same exact industry, in the same geography, can operate their businesses very differently.
Well, you're going to hate the next one then.
Okay.
What if you could bring the customer to a productive life state with almost no human interaction?
So I should find another line of work.
Well, there's always license sales. But my opinion, and I'm no hardcore Business Central, intellect, let's say.
User.
Yeah, user. But it's impossible, right? Just judging by the people we deal with, the customers that we have. There's no way nobody's going to have any questions or need interaction or need help with something or training or processes or whatever it could be. Ken's got steam coming out of the ears right now. I see the devil ears holding up the halo.
Maybe he's picturing like 20 years, 10 years from now when ChatGPT is going to be taking over all the implementations.
Maybe. Microsoft did invest in ChatGPT. So maybe in the next couple months, ChatGPT is going to be the thing to set you up.
That's the end.
Next up, what if all of this could be automated so you don't have to spend time spinning up trials for potential customers? That would be great. So this is actually part of the 2023 release wave one, even though it's not in the release plan. He says that it's fresh off the press, so it's going to be added soon. We'll see.
Yeah, I did see that Microsoft is adding new features to allow ISVs to, you can embed specific apps into environments and deploy those. And absolutely, there's a use for those in prospecting and proof of concepts and trials. But when it gets into implementation mode, there are just realities of how small to mid-sized companies operate and how unique they are, that would create a lot of difficulties for them. If they, you flip one or two flags the wrong way when you're setting up the system, and you could be in for a world of hurt. And without the right consulting help to help you understand the pros and cons and the impact on users' day-to-day interactions with the system up front so you can make those right decisions. You could think that it's the software that's terrible, but it's not really. It's the choices that were made when it was set up that aren't a good fit for your particular business or workflow.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Soren, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. If you're listening, we're going to invite you onto the podcast to debate Ken.
That would be
fun. Or have a discussion with Ken.
I don't want to debate. I just want to have a discussion about that. Would be awesome to understand, what is that vision? What does that look like? And what is that? How does that work?
Yeah. Absolutely. We'll reach out to you.
That'd be great.
All right. Here's a big one that I saw for news. Well, first of all, there's a new Business Central quarterly news update newsletter available for partners. So if you're a partner, check it out. It was last updated, probably in July or something like that. And within that newsletter, I found this. It said, important, take action before March 1st to retain your delegated admin access to your customers. Earlier this year, Partner Center introduced granular delegated administration privileges as a replacement for delegated admin privileges. Now, I did not know that it was a replacement. I thought it was just on top of that to help, support customers. But now they're saying that this is actually a must do. It has to be done by March 1st, 2023. You need to transition all your customers off the DAP to the granular delegated administration privileges. If you don't take action by March 1st, you're going to lose access to your customers' Business Central environments. What a pain in the you-know-what that's going to be. Because you have to set up security. permissions for your own company to give the users in it the access to the GDAP. Then you got to get all your customers to approve the granular admissions. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm seriously hoping that either we are misunderstanding what they're saying it needs to be done, or they're going to push that date back like they usually do on things because of the unreasonable nature of that.
Well,
of that.
Right. But first, you know, you have to go to all your customers and you got to transition them to the new commerce experience. Okay. Which some are happy, some weren't happy, whatever, you know, whoever. Now you got to go back to them and change all the administration privileges. It's just, it's ridiculous. You know, some people have more than 5-10 customers. It could take a long time to do, especially if customers don't answer email or don't see your email or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. So no doubt. I mean, the effect of cost on both partners and end users who have to participate in this process is thousands and thousands of dollars in lost revenue.
Yeah.
It literally is for a internal, you know, maintenance type decision that Microsoft made. Instead of, like you're saying, why not offer this on top of the existing one so that you can do delegated privileges instead of completely replacing?
Yeah, because there were customers in the past who didn't want you to have access to all their information, which is fine. But the customers that do, why can't they just stay how they are? And then the customers who didn't want that, just we'll work it out and give them the granular access. So
yeah, so we're gonna play this one by ear and see what happens here with this one. But
we're gonna cry. All right, next up, the modern action bar documentation has been updated. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more documents that have been updated, so check that out. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. Don't miss the upcoming Business Central office hours. February 7th is Power Platform Integrations, and March 14th is Onboarding Your Customers at Business Central. Excuse me. And then, there is a link now for everything Business Central. It's aka.ms/BC links, where you can see everything for Business Central, which is very nice. Finally, instead of having searched through the vast pages of Microsoft's website, you got a starting point for certain things.
That is a good one.
Yeah, and then let's see what else I got here. Last but not least, Microsoft released the top 10 hot ideas last quarter for Business Central. Everything from multiple application insights keys to the most popular one was sync chart of accounts, vendors, and customers between multiple BC companies. We'll put this list on the show notes just so people can take a look to see what's pretty popular.
That was listed in the new features.
I saw it in the newsletter.
I think we're going to talk about that in our 2023.
All the actual sync chart of accounts? Oh, I don't know.
I think so.
We'll see. All right. Well, this was top 10 hot ideas for last quarter, so it's possible.
Yeah.
All right, Ken, what do you got? You got a couple more things, I know, right?
Yeah, just a couple things. One, there is a DynamicsCon virtual conference, March 15th and 16th, being held. So check out more information online about that. Day one is sessions filled with user-submitted session ideas and votes. Those were due by January 13th, so that ship has sailed, but you can certainly attend those and see those sessions. And then day two is what's called a Microsoft Customer Success Day. I think this is mainly a day that's being led by Microsoft team members to talk about different Business Central topics throughout the day. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is that and we may have touched on this already, but I just want to, touch on it again. You know, for years and years and years, Microsoft has had a product life cycle for Dynamics NAV that provided full support for 5 years and limited support for up to 10 years per release.
Wow.
And what that meant was basically for 5 years, they're going to make sure that your version was compatible with other Microsoft products and that if there were any issues reported, Microsoft would provide an update and make it globally available to existing clients. That is now changed. It is 18 months.
Wow.
So with the, most customers, by the way, who are deploying Business Central now are going Business Central online. I would say the vast majority.
Mm-hmm.
So that is irrelevant, right? Because Microsoft is updating the environment on a monthly basis. So it's really just for Business Central on-premise. And the thought process is, you know, now with the availability of extensions and the ease with which you can upgrade Business Central in most circumstances, you know, three releases is really what that is, because every 6 months there's a major release. Yeah. So you're getting backwards three releases of full support and then moving. So I think it's reasonable. The one exception to this is version 14, which is kind of our hybrid Business Central on-premise role, where you can have the old classic Object Designer plus extensions.
Yeah.
So that version is continued. We see cumulative updates continuing to come out.
So maybe that'll be on the 5-year
for
plan.
For 14, right.
Hopefully.
Yep.
Not bad.
So that's all I have for news.
What do we got next then?
Next, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into 2023 Wave 1 features. All right. 2023 Release Wave 1. Or as Michael calls it, 2023 R1. So we've got, this is, these are features that are expected to be released in April. Officially, this release will come out April 1st for on-premise. But some of these new features for BC Online will be deployed anywhere between April 1st and September 30th. So it could be a future month, not in April. But we've got, you know, again, like always, Microsoft has kind of categorized the different changes and improvements and additions into different categories. So we'll kind of go down through those lists of categories. There's 47 total new features listed, and you know, there's this beautiful new web page that Microsoft has put up. It's basically experience.dynamics.com/release-plans. The page title is Dynamics 365 and Microsoft Power Platform Release Planner. So you can go in there and kind of click on it, see all the different features and expected release dates and other details on these. So
for all the products, just Business Central.
Yeah, for all the Dynamics and related products. So yeah, we're not going to go through, as we have in the past, all 47 of these. We're not going to name or deep dive on all 47. Instead, kind of go through the categories of these and tell you one or two of our favorite ones, or meaningful ones, or ones that are otherwise noteworthy that are included. So I will get us kicked off here with the first group of changes, I believe, is at the Power Platform.
And this one is user experiences.
Okay, user experience. We'll go with your list here. So under user experience, the most noteworthy one that I wanted to point out here is one called Add Existing Table Fields to Optimize Your Pages. It's actually expected for preview or release in June, or public preview in June. And here's the key thing. This is why I believe this is important. Up until now, if you're on a page, and let's say you're on a list page, customer list page, and there's a field that you want to add to your list page, you can go into Personalize, right, and go to hit Add Field. Mm-hmm. The field that you want to add may not be listed as an available field to be added. The reason is because Microsoft has decided which fields on that page they want users to be able to add. From the sounds of this, it looks as if all table fields on each table will now be allowed for users to personalize by adding it to their pages. This is huge because, so in the scenario where I said today, this, you go in and want to add a field, if that field's not there, guess what you have to do to get it there?
Extension.
You have to build an extension, which takes a developer. So,
and money.
And money, right? And time. Yep. So how long does it take to do it? What does it cost? And what's the long-term impact of that? Now, if all fields on each table are available for now, that power is in the user's hands, right, to control. What do they want to have? They can pick from any of those available fields, including custom fields that have been added as well.
So in theory, though, you can add fields that, that do not, that are not applicable to that page. If you can pick from any field.
No, if you're on if you're on, for example, if you're on the customer list page, you would be limited to only picking fields on the customer table.
Okay, gotcha.
Right. Now, to your point, are there maybe some fields on there that could create confusion for users because they're not sure what that field is or how that field might be used behind the scenes? That's possible, but that downside is outweighed by the positives of giving the users the ability to add any fields they want. I think this was an idea, a Business Central idea, that I'm not sure if I created the idea, but I certainly voted.
Really?
I certainly voted for the idea, if that's how this came into being. So I'm very excited about this one.
Nice.
Did you have
the one I chose,
new user experience?
Well, so it's not really, I guess, a new user experience now. It actually was mentioned in the 2022 release Wave 2 for Business Central, and the public preview was available September 30th, 2022. But I'm one of these guys who's a stickler for production. I like when, I like when things help you, be more productive and take less time. So I use the Tell Me feature in Business Central, the search feature, whatever you want to call it, all the time for everything.
All the time.
So now that they're basically expanding that feature to where it's you can now search across all data relevant to your role and not just business transactions. So hopefully people become more productive, find things a lot easier, and it's great.
Yep.
So.
Absolutely. All right. What do we got next? Application.
Application.
All right. Your list is better than the list that I saw on the thing.
That's a big list.
Application, right? This is what users care about. Give me more features, baby. All right.
Absolutely.
So the one that I saw here is set up and sync master data across companies.
We are on the same page, Ken. Same page.
This is something that we've seen as a request for years. There's been master data, software applications out there to help companies manage this. So now what this means is, for example, if you have two legal entities, two companies, but they use the same vendors, and you get a new vendor, you don't have to go in and set up that vendor twice.
Yep.
You can set up that vendor one time and set it to sync automatically with the other company or companies that you
have. Beautiful. That is beautiful.
Oh, it is.
Was that, I don't know too much about Nav, was that a big feature in Nav?
It was Osmo a big Nav? Requested feature.
Oh, really?
In Nav.
It wasn't around for Nav either?
Why do I have to create, I want to add a new GL account. I've got five companies. I've got to go create that GL account five times if I want it in all five companies.
Wow.
Yes, you do. Right? Unless you've built a customization or maybe use some third party app to integrate that data. Yeah. So that's huge.
Nice.
My backup, by the way, was one called ship and receive non-inventory items on warehouse documents.
Well, you being the manufacturing type of guy that you are.
This is something that we've just run into in the real world where, a lot of times people use non-inventory items for things like warehouse or shop supplies, right? These are things that I buy, like safety glasses, gloves, maybe certain packaging materials. And I still need to create a purchase order to a vendor, and I want to have a purchase price on it, and I want to receive it. But I don't want to track how many I have in inventory, right? Gotcha. I just want to expense it immediately. And that's what a non-inventory item does. However, in the real world, the problem is that here comes this box into the warehouse through the receiving dock, and the warehouse worker wants to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's a non-inventory item, he can't receive it currently on a warehouse document. So you now have kind of a separate procedure for receiving non-inventory items in the warehouse. It seems like this will eliminate that and allow them to just go through their normal receiving process, even though it's a non-inventory type item.
Very nice. Yeah. All right. What do we got next? Uh-oh. Your favorite.
Development. Da, da, da.
Well, yeah, let me start off here. So, obviously, I'm not a developer. And
obviously.
Not a developer. Yeah, obviously. Oh, it's obvious. Believe me, it's obvious. Well, maybe with ChatGPT, I could be.
Tomorrow, you will be.
Yeah. But I went through and I decided to look at one and see if there's anything out here that's
how,
stood out
how
to
many
me.
You got on this list? Eight? About eight Three, new four, things? Four, nine?
Seven,
eight, nine. Ten. Like ten. Okay, so ten options for you to pick a favorite from.
Yeah, and I happen to choose attach AL debugger to active session or next session. Now, what's interesting about this choice is that it was actually given its stamp of approval by one of our developers here at Solution Systems, who also, Ken said, chose the same option as his favorite, right?
That's true. So what I did, I separately, without Michael's knowing, went out and asked a developer, one of our developers, Ryan Sullivan, to weigh in on these 10 new features and tell us which one is he most excited about. And I will share with you why he's excited about this in a moment after Michael shares with us why he's so excited about this new feature.
All right. So first, let me read you a couple sentences. It says, the legacy CAL debugger supported attaching to an existing session or to the next session for a specific user. While this has been possible with the AL snapshot debugger for some time, the standard, more powerful AL debugger in Visual Studio Code is still missing this capability, and it's been a partner asked to fill this gap for a while. Okay. So once I read those two sentences.
You know what I heard there?
So once I read these first couple sentences, I thought, you know what? Visual Studio Code is huge for developers now.
Sure.
If they had this in the past with CAL, but they don't have it in Visual Studio Code with AL, it's got to be the go-to choice. And it looks like I was right.
You are correct. Now, let me give you a little real feedback. Again, this was from one of our developers. And here is, and I'm going to go ahead and quote here. This will be amazing.
Ooh.
Snapshot debugging, the current method, only captures specific errors, is tedious at best to configure and connect. With the full AL debugger, we will be able to set breakpoints and step through code to isolate specific issues, even when it may not be an error. Currently, in order to perform this type of debugging, we have to make a copy of the production environment in order to utilize the full AL debugger. This is time-consuming and doesn't always yield the same results. Sandboxes are a little bit more lenient on some issues and don't reproduce the same types of issues in some cases. So,
but this is huge.
So, yeah, as this thing mentions, partners have been asking to fill this gap for a while. So, and it seems like it's obvious why. Troubleshooting and resolution of issues significantly faster.
You know, Ryan and I are always on the same page.
With yeah,
beer,
you too.
I mean, coding,
you,
whatever.
You guys are just at your hackathons.
Yeah. He's also been on the podcast, so I'll link to that in the podcast. You guys can listen to what he says.
Absolutely.
All right.
Hey, for once we actually had something meaningful to talk
for development.
To say for the new development features.
Yeah, developers got to hate us when they listen to this show. What do we got next? Legislation, you got anything?
Yeah, there's like an audit file export that you can, for if you're audited internationally and have to provide some format. That's about it.
Productive with Microsoft 365.
Oh, productive. I just saw that they're enhancing the experience of the card views in Teams.
Yeah.
So I don't know, making them a little bit easier to read or limiting the what data people can see or what they can do on those.
Yeah. It's interesting though because a couple years ago the productive with Microsoft 365 section was filled with different integration type things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But over the last couple of releases, it's kind of waned out a little bit.
Yeah.
So. You won't get anything for onboarding?
Onboarding, yeah. So under the onboarding category, just that they're continuing development of the tooltips, the built-in integrated help, and making the tooltips easier to read and understand. So,
I do not have a favorite one in onboarding. It's kind of...
So governance and administration is the next category. My top one in here was experience improved app management settings. So currently, you can go into the app management page in your admin center, and you can see what version you're running of each app mm-hmm. in your environment, and you can click on a button, and you can update that app if you want. And what they're doing is adding new settings to manage those apps. So specifically, specify when updates for apps can be installed automatically, or a single button that you can click to update all apps at once. So nice. Nothing earth-shattering, but just continue to improve so users don't end up getting on a really old, outdated version of an app. You can just set it to update automatically, or just hit one button and it updates all your apps.
So on my notes, I put for the include or exclude tables from cloud migration, I put it down there with some question marks, meaning I wanted to ask you. I don't understand, just because this is government, you can't include, right? I mean, is it limiting what tables you can, what tables that you can?
I think it's, this category is governance and administration.
Oh, governance, sorry.
So maybe this is more of the under the administration.
Gotcha.
Where you could have some historical, like large table with a ton of data in it, and you don't want to migrate it. Or another good example, we ran into this recently. A customer has like 20 million records in the change log entries table.
Wow.
Well, when you're upgrading from NAV to BC, you do not need to bring 20 million change log entries. Now, that example, we were able to purge those records and move on, but we were lucky in that case. If you're not, this allows you to say, you know what, these tables, don't bring these over. We don't want them.
Gotcha. Right.
What do you got? Power Platform here?
Adapt faster with Microsoft Power Platform.
Yeah, so this one is, this is huge. It's the one called Support Dynamic Environment and Company in Power Platform Connector. Now it's due out, it says May, I think.
Yep, 2023.
And here's why this is so important. Today, if you're a Business Central user and you want to create some use Power Automate to automate some things. So let's say you build a really sweet workflow with some rules on approving orders. As the developer of that automation, you cannot just export that automation and import it into another tenant, because the environment and the company names are embedded within the actual automation itself. So what they've done here, it looks like, is they're creating variables that allow you to basically port these solutions from one environment to the other. So if you kind of, what is that? What the hell are you talking about, Ken? Here's what I mean. As a Business Central partner, we can't just create a whole bunch of workflows and then package those together as a solution where we just click a button and put those into a new tenant environment. Because of the environment and the company all embedded inside there, the variables in there. So now what it looks like is that you will be able to do this. You will be able to build a solution and quickly just port it into a new environment.
So it's a time-saving thing, really. Right?
Well, not even a time. More than a time saving. It's like really almost rebuilding the wheel every time you want to use that wheel in a different environment.
Gotcha.
Right now, it's saying you can take that kind of like an extension. Right. Think about an extension. When we code an extension, a customization, like a new report, we can build that new report in a way that it can be, we can just export it and we can import it wherever we want.
Yeah.
Right? Into any BC environment. This is getting the Power Platform tools, Power Apps, Power Automate, into a similar scenario.
Very, very nice.
Without having to be a super master of the Power Platform universe.
Which is pretty hard not to be. Oh, your favorite, country and regional.
Oh, country and regional. Yeah, you got your Swedish localization, which I'm guessing the people in Sweden are happy about that, no doubt. But my favorite one is the other one. More countries and regions are added. And can you click on learn more learn there? More. Let's see can get this. There we go. So what they're doing, what Microsoft is doing, there's kind of two ways that Microsoft delivers localized versions of Business Central. One is through localizations built and supported by Microsoft. And then there are partner-led localizations. And there is a long list here of new partner-led localizations. It's going to get to be over 130 countries. And I'm embarrassed to admit to everyone here today that there are countries on this list that I have not heard of. My example that I used is Guernsey.
Where's it at?
Yep.
Ghana?
Jersey.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's its own country. I thought that was a city in the British Isles.
Yeah, there's a lot of things here.
Yeah. San Marino, Sao Tome, and Principal.
I'm sure they're all listeners of the podcast.
We're heavy. We're heavy in San Marino, baby.
Isle of Man. Yeah, so it's kind of misleading, though, right, that Microsoft says they're putting Business Central in all these countries, right, because most of them are partner-led.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, if you're in Andorra and you want to run Business Central and there's a few tax or regulatory forms and reports or some functions that you need, it's good to know you could run that, and there's an extension or localization extension that you can use that gives you that functionality that you need. Yeah. So that's awesome. Worldwide.
Yeah, it's moving on up. Pretty cool. I think that does it.
Yeah, that's
record time. Record time to go over.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel good about it.
You feeling good about going into the next segment?
I do.
Talk about ChatGPT and Microsoft.
I do. I'm not sure I'm ready for 2023 Wave 1 yet, although we got a couple months, right? So this is just the announcement of the new features and the deployment schedule. But I feel like, is it time moves faster as you get older?
I was going to say, it seems like they come quicker and quicker now as opposed to when it first came out. So.
Yeah.
All right. ChatGPT next. All right, it's time to talk about artificial intelligence and the way it has begun running the world and how everybody's afraid of it. No, we're going to talk about artificial intelligence mixed in with Microsoft software, specifically an AI program called ChatGPT. So ChatGPT, in my opinion, is a toddler of AI, let's say, right? Where it's brand new, but it's still impressing you. And according to ChatGPT, ChatGPT is a language generation model developed by OpenAI. It is based on the GPT architecture, which is a type of transformer-based neural network.
What does GPT stand for?
Generative Pre-Training Transformer.
And OpenAI is the company that has created this specific product?
Yes. Okay. So it also says that the model is trained on a large data set of text and is able to generate human-like responses to a given prompt. ChatGPT can be used for a variety of natural language processing tasks, such as text generation, conversation simulation, language translation, and question answering. And I think, before I go on, this is the biggest difference between this and like your Google Home or Alexa or whoever it is, right? This is actually conversation. It answers back and you can ask it questions as you would normally talk. So it's a little bit different. ChatGPT also says that one of its main advantages is its ability to generate highly coherent and fluent text, making it well suited for applications such as chatbots, virtual assistants, language-based games. It can also be fine-tuned for specific tasks and domains. and can also be integrated with various platforms and applications, which Microsoft is what'd you say, Ken? They have the sole rights to ChatGPT?
You looked it up? So it looks like in 2019, Microsoft invested about $1 billion in OpenAI to help develop this. And they have exclusive rights to the GPT-3
product. Which is this platform, the one that we've been using mostly. So the question is, what do you think? You think Microsoft is going to eventually integrate this into all their software? If they do, are you going to be able to give it like voice commands where we can say something like, you know, hey, ChatGPT, open up Business Central. Let's say you're a new customer. Open up Business Central and configure it for a manufacturing company. Do you think it's ever going to get to that point?
Who knows?
I see the enthusiasm.
Well, what's curious is like right now, we've been kind of playing around with this today as we're getting ready for the podcast, right? Finding out about Rice Lager, right? All that fun stuff. But you're just on a, you know, chat.openai.com, right?
Yep.
And just typing in questions and it's kicking back responses. So it's free.
It's right free. Now. Yeah, it's free.
So the question is, does it remain free? Is there any benefit of taking this and embedding it into another product? Right. So I'm sure there is, how that gets done, who really knows, right? Like chatbots, they said, like, so maybe it's the front end is a chatbot, but behind the scenes, it's providing the responses.
Yeah. Yeah. I see this as like the new Cortana for Microsoft. Microsoft kind of had a failed experience with Cortana. But this is obviously on another level. And I think if Microsoft doesn't build an integration for ChatGPT, somebody's going to build one, an integration for Business Central with ChatGPT. Somebody is going to build one. Lately, I've been looking into all the things that have been built off of this ChatGPT platform. And the AI, there is probably, I don't know, 1,000 different AI bots associated already with ChatGPT. Okay. And it's only had access since December.
Yeah, and what this looks like here, it says that the if you're going to use their API, then there is a fee, which is based on the number of requests that are made and the amount of time that is compute time used to generate the results. So, and then there's the free usage tier and I guess what we're using here.
Yeah. And what's pretty amazing is I read, and don't quote me on this, but right now ChatGPT 3 is pulling from something like 15 to 20 million sources or whatever. The next version is supposed to pull from, I think they said 750 million sources. So it's going to go from a toddler to a teenager, maybe even a young adult pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yep. But me personally, I can see this working really well with Business Central. I think as a virtual assistant, you know, it can assist employees with tasks like scheduling, inventory management, order tracking. You can use it too if you have a business to create automated responses to, you know, frequent questions your customers have. So, for instance, I put in there, just to see what it says. I said, what steel is used to manufacture an O-ring? Knowing that, you know, in my head, O-rings are all pretty much rubber. And it said, O-rings are typically made from rubber or synthetic elastomer, not steel. And it told me all the different types of rubbers and whatnot. So it's there to help answer questions pretty fast. Eventually, you know, maybe use it for data automation, where an example could be inputting customer information or order details into actually Business Central. Marketing campaigns, obviously, this is going to kill every content writer's job that's out there. Let's see what else we got. Reports, ChatGPT can generate, analyze all your data in Business Central and create financial reports for you. Obviously, it's going to be able to help users. You know, you might be able to say, how do I create a sales quote? It'll give you the steps to it or whatnot.
So yeah.
Those are some of the things that I thought of.
And the
developers one is pretty good too.
Yeah, same thing. Yep. Support for developers and writing code. Right? Yep. Is that what you're talking about there, where you can...
It'll actually give you code.
Tell it, hey, here's what I'd like this to do, and then it can write out the code for you that you would need. That's really intriguing. But I like, also on the reporting and analysis side, right? Like, hey, here's my sales data. You could say, hey, what, you know, analyze my sales data.
Yeah.
Or analyze my financial statements and have it kick back results.
Well, right.
What it sees in the data.
Yeah. And you can take it a step further and then say, based on this data, which of our customers is most likely to purchase or make a purchase or, you know, some crazy question. And
yeah.
It'll answer, which is.
And I'll try to answer.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It will answer.
Yeah.
It the just question may not be right. Is it the right answer?
Ken's a big ChatGPT AI fan.
Well, everything you've said so far is great, right? Except the part about killing off all the content jobs. The
copywriters, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. But besides that, right, these are all positive things that, you know, help get answers to questions, learn more information, right, making sure something is well written, analyzing data, helping users mm-hmm. be more efficient, blah 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 blah. But,
do 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 do.
Aren't there downsides to everything? So, what are the known current limitations or issues like that have been seen with this? So, it didn't take me long to find several things that were concerns of people. The first and the most important one on the list is that the answers are not always correct.
Absolutely.
And what's great is that I'm being facetious, is that
we know where you stand.
The answer is very compelling, right? It's a well-written answer that looks trustworthy, but can be completely wrong. And there's actually a term that I found repeated on multiple articles called a hallucination of fact and fiction, or a hallucinatory effect or whatever, which is actually they've kind of rated it recently at 15 to 20% of the answers are not correct.
Tie.
But if you were to read it, it you'd be like, oh, well, that has to be right. True.
So it's a salesperson's dream,
right? And imagine, you know, the one of the scariest personal use cases is you know, it's something to do with medical advice.
Yeah.
And if you're relying on this for answers about medications or medical advice,
or even how to treat a wound or something, yeah,
right. There's a lot of risk there. So that's the first thing, right? And to your point, maybe as the data sources go from 15 million to 100 million or billion Absolutely. Or whatever, that will improve. The second one is that it is biased. It is biased. So there's been tests that have done, meaning that what it's doing is its source of information, of data, is existing data available on the internet. And humans are responsible for putting data on the internet,
gotcha.
By and large. So inherently, when it looks for answers, those answers may be biased towards one group or another.
So biased, but not on purpose, right? Just biased because of that's the only data that's available.
Yeah, it's analyzing all of the data that's out there. And, you know, you ask it a question maybe about something, and the result may be, it could be biased against women or a minority or, right, an ethnicity,
yeah.
a religious group. It could
politics.
Be any political party, yeah. Right, any of those things. Because it's looking at all the data out there. And, you know, there's a lot of real world examples of where companies have tried to use this, and it's they've generated biased results, yeah. And so let's crack open a fourth or fifth beer after this podcast and talk about some of those things and the pros and cons of those, but we'll move on here. So that's the second thing. So it's wrong sometimes. It's biased. It's also not real time. Mm-hmm. So it's currently based on, I believe, data that was last refreshed up through the end of 2021.
Yeah.
something like that. So anything recent, like weather, traffic conditions, stock prices, ticket availability for a concert, things like that, it's not going to know. It's not in its universe of knowledge, currently, at least. It could be used to cheat. So students at any level who have to write a report, they can just, one, they could have ChatGPT proofread their report for them and give them recommendations, or even worse,
write the report.
Write the whole damn report.
Yep.
Right. So
30 seconds.
Yeah. So that is a legit concern there. And then the last kind of note I had, on the Debbie Downer side of the equation is that OpenAI is in charge. It's a closed system. OpenAI it determines how they train this, what data gets included,
right,
and whether or not one agrees with their methods, they're going to pursue this technology using their own goals.
Yes. To me, this is the most scary thing out of your list, right? Because you see it all the time now, or you hear about it all the time with Meta and Google, and they're imposing their thoughts on you. You hear a lot about it too with news media,
Mm-hmm.
Whether you like, CNN or Fox News, but they're all, so the question is OpenAI going to become a propaganda wing for something? Hopefully not, But it's run by people. People have biases.
Yeah. And it is, the ultimate, what'd you say? The ultimate, the ultimate risk. I think that there's examples out there where people have asked legitimate questions, and the answers that they've gotten back from the AI tools is pretty unsettling.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of, I think was one of them ultimately, yes, we're going to take over the world eliminate the humans.
Well, there's stories, there were, I don't know if it was, it might have been Facebook, where they had two AI bots conversing with each other, and they actually wrote its new language because they said the English language is very inefficient. That's kind of scary.
So then they could communicate with each other, but no one else could understand.
So they had to be unplugged.
No, those are, Elon Musk and others,
the Neuralink and everything,
pretty relatively intelligent people have stated that there is risk.
Huge risk involved with this. So question you though, are you for or against AI? Let's not put gray, right? Let's just say you're either for, let's say AI in 10 years where it's fully developed, fully capable. You think it's going to be good or bad for people?
I'm still, I don't yet have an opinion. Ultimately, I guess, progress is going to progress. So things are going to change. I think what they need to do is they need to, really have some guardrails on it and be careful with it. If you look at a very good example is the internet. Is the internet a positive or a negative overall? I don't think anyone's going to argue that the internet hasn't led to an improved quality of life for millions and billions of people around the world, right? Yet there are downsides to it.
The tools.
There's whatever. There's a lot of downsides to it.
Yeah.
And it has negatively impacted society in several ways.
Yeah.
But you can't, right? I don't know that you can look at that and say, well, then we should have no internet. Right, maybe it's the same type of thing with this that this is going to be a part of our world. It's to what extent.
I actually think this is going to be bigger than the internet, right? Because it's going to encompass everything the internet has, right? You'll just ask it whatever question you want, and it's going to be able to do things for you physically, which, once it's put into like a robot or whatever, you know what I mean. Have you ever seen iRobot with Will Smith?
Nope.
You've got homework, Ken. That was made.
Wall-E.
Oh, you saw Wall-E? I didn't see Wall-E. But the cartoon, right? I know you're talking about it. But yeah, I think it was made in 2004. but it's depiction of the future with artificial intelligence and everything. It's dead on. That's us in 10 years. You can see the progression. So
yeah,
it's not always good in that movie either.
I'll have to check that out.
So while we're sitting here, I asked ChatGPT to write a Business Central song. And within 30 seconds, it wrote a Business Central song. Choruses, verses.
Yeah, well, are you going to read it? I mean, how good is it? Yeah. What's the chorus?
You want to sing it?
Well, if you have a melody.
No, so the chorus is Business Central, oh how grand, helping us take control of our land. We'll streamline your operations and make our customers understand. Interesting.
What's verse 2?
Production orders and bombs, work centers and inventory, tombs? What's a tomb?
Like, I have no idea.
It's not a T-O-O-M-S? From routing to cost accounting, Business Central is amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty lame.
From routing to cost accounting. I love it.
I mean, I put it together. I'll give it that. But I'm not sure if that's a platinum album right there.
But, you know, for how fast it can do something. I mean, so I just typed in create a Business Central rap. And literally 30 seconds, you're going to have an entire song.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm saying it's doing its thing.
It's really weird.
Yeah. Now we did a real world test earlier and this is so Business Central people listen up. I said, how is the routing link code used in Business Central?
Yeah.
I believe is the question I asked. And it gave a pretty long multi-paragraph answer to the question, which was flat out wrong.
Yeah, but it's interesting because you can tell it took a long time for it to respond.
It was just wrong. And like if you had read it, though, and you didn't know better, you would be convinced that, oh, that's what a routing link code is. It was just wrong. So that was the first actual test that we did, Business Central feature functionality. Well, the second one we asked it was, how is the product inactivity code used in Business Central? And this one took a while, and it spun, it dropped, you know, this little cursor splash in there. Finally, it kicked back an answer about what the product inactivity code does in Business Central. Again, multiple paragraphs of answer. Of course, there is no such thing as the product inactivity code in Business Central. Yeah. So once again, it tried its damnedest to provide a nice result. But the truth is there is no product inactivity code.
Right. So it's probably pulling from somebody who created an extension or you know, add-on called that, but it can't distinguish between whether it's a Business Central feature or if it's somebody else who just created it.
Which is one of, to your points earlier, you said it would be nice if it showed you its sources.
Yes.
I would say not only nice, I would say almost required.
Yeah.
Like that you can click somewhere and see what are the top 10 word pull sources. Through. That it may have pulled from.
Just so you know, if it's legit or not. Kind of like Wikipedia, where Wikipedia lists their resources.
Yeah. So that was our first couple stabs at it. Then we asked a couple softballs.
Yeah.
Lobbed a couple softballs up there, and it was able to provide answers that probably from Microsoft Learn, which you probably could have just went there and done it just as easily. But
it's interesting, right? For the first AI tool to be put out that actually you can talk to, I mean, it's only version one. Think back what your first image of the internet is.
No doubt. This is beta version 1.0, right? Usually user adoption doesn't really start to kick in till version 4.0. The early adopters show up at 2.0, some additional people at 3.0, but 4.0 is like mass adoption.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know. So yeah, there's a ways to go, but yes, it's pretty cool that you can just go try it out.
Yeah, I think so. Personally, I like it. I'm on board with AI. I think there's no getting around it. I think you're either going to embrace it or you're going to be left behind. So,
or you embrace it and it leaves you for dead.
Could be. I love technology, so I could be screwed either way.
This is a fun conversation. We probably could sit here for another hour and have fun with this. But
so
I'm sure everyone's got other things to do.
Yep. On that note, we're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, be sure to share the podcast and everything.
And we
want to rate the beers.
Rate the beer before we go.
I'm off my game today with these allergies. They're killing me. All right. I like this beer. I haven't drunk a lot of it, but I like it. So it definitely reminds me of a domestic beer. I don't know. I get like maybe Bud Light notes. I don't know. It's hard to say. MGD is a little bit in there too, the champagne of beers. So for me, I'm going to rate this. It's got good color, light alcohol. I'm probably going to give it a 72.
I'm going to go 77.
77?
Yeah.
Wow, lower than I thought you'd go.
Right below Miller Lite at 70, right there.
You got Miller Lite in the 70s?
78.
Wow, that's your go-to, isn't it, at home?
It is, but, you know, it's the go-to because it's just beer, right?
It's just beer. So not bad, not bad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it then. I think we covered everything.
We got it.
Ken, you want to take us home?
Bye-bye.
As we end today's podcast, we want to give a big thank you to everyone who listens, shares this podcast, and leaves us reviews. You've taken a good amount of your time out of your day, and we truly appreciate it. Thanks again, and don't be afraid to email us at marketing@solsyst.com with your tips for the podcast, or maybe you'd even like to be a guest during an episode.